Okay, you guys survived a fantastic German lunch, I hope. Okay, so following up on Jeremy's talk, we get to talk about some of the wonders of POSIX problems, but also talk a little bit about some things I think are very fun, right? The technical challenges I think Jeremy alluded to. You know, in the storage world, we deal with some really fascinating, fun problems. You guys have known me for years from previous talks, previous conferences, and this is very, very interesting work. I work for Primary Data, and I maintain the Linux kernel client. I've also been having some fun looking at some interesting Samba things now. I'm really excited some about the CTDB features we're going to hear later on in the afternoon, you know, Amitai and Martin. Okay, the Linux kernel makes amazing progress, and it's on clockwork cycle. Now, how many of you guys like charred weasels or fearless coyotes? So I love the names here, so this is fun. It's actually a big technical challenge to figure out what is the most fearless coyote pose. I don't know. But in any case, the Linux kernel is on this clockwork schedule. We just released a new kernel a few days ago, 4.11, and I hope all of you are running it just as I was running the 4.11 kernel as I was preparing this. So, as many of you, Matthew, you were there, right? So, how many of this group of people do you recognize? You should recognize, of course, James and others. But anyway, this is, as you can see, we have celebrities here. But I do want to compliment the Linux kernel file system community. It's an extremely good community. We disparage them regularly in Samba for good and valid reasons. As you know, many of the problems in Samba are caused because of lack of interfaces that have existed in BSD or Solaris or whatever else. But this is really a strong group of developers. So here we are looking out over the river in Cambridge, Massachusetts a few months ago. So what do we talk about in the file system community that you guys actually care about? Well, fast memory, NVMe, right? Does that matter to Samba? Yep. I think even Tom Talpe, in his talk, discussed a few things that are, relating to these evolving features. What matters to us? Really fast storage protocols over the wire for getting data from your client to your server. Your enlightened drivers, your RDMA drivers in virtualization across the... And also, in the server room, multiple adapters and RDMA. Special casing, obviously, virtualized drivers. Special casing, perhaps some cloud use cases. But we do really care about these faster network interfaces. Do we care about crypto? Absolutely. Going to the cloud, you have to have the ability to have encrypted shares. That's in there now. Well, we don't want to talk about Rich Hackle. But in any case, I'm super excited about StatX. Now we have an extensible mechanism as of 3 days ago, in the kernel, for getting at things that seem really obvious to us. Does anybody care when a file is created? Well, dedupe apps do. Backup does. Obviously, copy offload. I don't know about you, but occasionally my kids go into Windows, which means they're dragging files from window to window. They're doing that. They're using copy offload. Big improvement recently in how we handle copy offload internally. Sparse file support, do we care? Well, lots of apps use it, and we support it. And of course, let's not forget that although we love Microsoft Word and it's kept Jeremy, well, Office alone has kept probably 3 years of Jeremy's life, maybe more, and Volker maybe more than 3 years of his life, getting things in Office working properly to Samba. The access patterns you see today are a little bit different for some of the workloads, and we have to be able to optimize those in the cloud. I think Tom hinted at this in his talk when he mentioned very long latencies, for example. We have to be able to deal with that, but also just different expectations. Okay, so what are the most active file systems? I think as you guys know, Linux is enormous. I don't know how many of you guys know, that's 15.5 million lines of code now. It's kind of exciting. I just did the source code count yesterday. There are about 7 file systems, maybe 8, that drive the majority of activity. How many of you guys know ButterFS is still the most active file system? XFS. You know, EXT4 doesn't get as much activity as you think, despite it being on lots of things, including probably my phone. Now, a couple things I find fascinating. NFS client's pretty active, but NFS server isn't. I mean, that's kind of weird. But it's fascinating the NFS client gets a lot of activity. The VFS layer itself, lots of changes. That includes StatX, for example. Anyway, the SIFS client is up about 30%, and some of the Aurelia, others in the room have contributed, Sachin, and you know, we want to get that up even higher because there's some really exciting things in progress. Now, let's be fair. Samba's much more interesting. How many changes went into Samba last year? It's a little hard to tell because of the multiple releases, but it's in the thousands. Okay, so I don't want to dwell too much on older releases, but just for some history here, back in 4.2, a little over a year, year and a half ago, we added the SMB 3.1.1 minimal dialect support. We added the support for the ref link style, the duplicate extend style that REFS supports for copy offload. Semantically, this means that you're just bumping a ref count on pages rather than actually moving or doing the... It's a little bit different approach than copy chunk, although in theory, copy chunk could map to something like this, but it's very fast. Now, 4.3, we had some important Mac authentication things. I think what you guys might most care about is the KRB5 support, because as we had a number of features that were only supported in SIFS, but everybody cares about SMB3. One of the things we have to do is turn off SIFS by default. I think Tom and others have mentioned this. The Unix extension stuff that we've been talking about is the remaining obstacle, but we wanted to make sure things like DFS and KRB5, well, DFS support, thank you, are now in. So making sure that all the, there's feature parity, so we're not losing anything by turning off SIFS. We also added some debug stuff so we can query all the crazy information about device info on the server. 4.4, we, you know, you frequently might copy offload, but you might do it from one share to another. Also, we wanted to be able to support resilient and persistent handles. Now, 4.5, ODirect improvement. I think what might be most visible in 4.5 is this idea that you may have different workloads, different network configurations that want to check whether the server is dead differently. You know, do you really want to check every 60 seconds, or do you need more quickly to see if the server is alive? So this echo interval allows you to more accurately tell whether the server is aware or alive, rather than waiting, you know, potentially 60 seconds, or slow it down if you want. Let's see. Going fast forwarding to 4.8, we talked a lot about symlinks in Jeremy's talk. What works today is the MF, Minchel French. It's nice of Apple to name it after me and Conrad. But that format emulates symlinks in a way that is sort of server agnostic, right? We don't care about the server. As long as you can file of a certain magic size and attributes, it'll be recognized as a symlink and followed on the client. Apple uses this in their product. And we had this in SIFS. Adding it for SMB3 gives us an alternative for symlinks that works reasonably by default. Now, some of the things Jeremy talked about are better, but it does give us an alternative for the reasonable future for the POSIX style symlinks. Okay, 4.9, very important reconnect things. One of the things you probably know is that as you reconnect, it's not good enough just to reconnect the socket. You really shouldn't have to wait for all the I.O. before you reopen all these persistent handles. And you know, reconnecting the socket's a good thing, but we can't wait until the next read comes in for an app before we reopen all those files. Another thing that was kind of interesting was Samba manufactures a SID if it doesn't know who you are. That's good. So if we get such a SID, we can report the UID. So if we have a user that's user 26, the SID is going to have this magic UID in it. We can report that properly. Because without POSIX extensions, In SIFS we can do it, but in SMB3 we can't report the UID owner of it. We default, of course, to an owner for the share, but this allows you in some cases to recognize that Samba has already told us who the UID who owns this file is. There are some servers that had bugs relating to credits. This allows us to override the number of credits. This is once again in 4.9. 4.10 we added a snapshot mount parm so you can mount an older copy of a share. 4.11 is very interesting, very exciting. So this most recent release includes reconnect improvements that I think matter to a lot of people. So let's say you mounted in SIFS with persistent handles, or you mounted to Azure that require persistent handles. You've got a continuous availability share, for example. Now in reconnection, we're going to reopen all of these automatically, immediately. And Citrix, Germano at Citrix and others, did a lot of testing on this and found a number of reconnect problems in their automated testing. So thanks to them for finding that. Also at Red Hat, Sachin had changed something that Christoph had disabled. And that is that when you do a CP command today, you have this option of cp --reflink that does a fast server-side copy. Now, originally that called into a copy chunk ioctl, and then we later added support for block ref counting. It was disabled, generally, when the ioctl changed in cp --reflink to a clone file range call, and this re-enables it. What it means to you is copies faster again. So if you do cp --reflink, your copy is now, unless you're going to RAFS where it was fast for the last, year. Today, going to Samba, you do a cp --reflink. It's back to using copy chunk by default if the RAFS style block ref counting is not supporting, we use copy chunk. What this means to you is copies faster again. You do cp --reflink, it's blindingly fast. And of course, we have a talk. I think your talk tomorrow, Aurelian, is that right? So he's giving a talk tomorrow on the DFS support for SMB3. And then Pavel did encryption support. And as part of encryption support, there's some other really cool things that are in process. Obviously, with encryption support, it changes a little bit how you might do compounding in the future. And so I think you're going to see some other things that are enabled that are easier now because that encryption support's in. But I think everybody likes the idea that, wow, you can now mount an encrypted share. Samba supported this for a while. There are times when you're going to Azure where you really want to do this going across the internet, but it's a neat SMB3 feature. And unlike NFS, the encryption can be on a per-share basis. So what's in progress? It's a really neat patch set Pavel put out there for AIO, and I'll talk about those results in a minute. But once again, the effect of all this is blindingly fast copy speed. It's great. There's a set of bug fixes. Also, I think StatX, the enablement for StatX in the VFS went in. You'll see that in the next few weeks. We today, if you wanted creation time or DOS attributes, you would return those via an XAdder only. We have an XAdder that allows you to return the creation time that Samba gave you or Windows gave you and the DOS attributes. What this is going to let you do is without having to do ioctl, you can use the new stat call, Volker. Oh, so I can talk about that a little bit, but the FIO test suite, and I probably ought to show you the test cases that Pavel were actually running. He posted them to the mailing list, but the key thing here he's experimenting with is queue depth on asynchronous IO. So what he's doing is the API that comes into the SIFS VFS for asynchronous writes. It's a little bit different than what you see up in user space. But, if you're running FIO, for example, or one of these benchmarks, that what you're in effect saying is, in his slides, is adjusting how many requests are in flight at once, the queue depth that you specify on the call. We can look at the details of what FIO does, but I think these are the same facilities you have available to you in Samba. These aren't, there's no magic here. This is just your... So let's look at the actual test cases he's running, which FIO, and just double check this. We're not talking, I mean, it clearly is a kernel API, right? So we're talking about the syscall going into the kernel. And, you know, once again, we tend to be blinded a little bit by our little API world. And in my world, I'm seeing it from the VFS perspective, not from what you call in user space. But the test cases he's using to drive this are FIO. And so we can look at what FIO is calling.
We can't really use it from Samba side because we get an arbitrarily aligned request from the kernel. I mean, we might use it if it happens to be aligned from what the client requests. But that's generally that's not the case. So we need to do threads.
By the way, this discussion is really useful. And I think that it's important to focus on the fact that the Samba, even if Samba can't use it in some cases, the client app set that can use block align stuff is huge.
Yeah, so the problem with permitting arbitrarily aligned user space IOs is that some devices cannot do IO to arbitrary alignment. We don't know of any that can't do 512 byte alignment. So that's why we have the 512 byte alignment restriction. There were other bad reasons for having alignment restrictions before. Those have been solved, but there were actual physical hardware devices that can't handle non-512 byte aligned.
Yeah, but this means that if we have a controlled stack that says, yes, we have this kernel version, this file system, that set of SCSI drivers and so on, that kind of device, it might be that for this specialized use case, we could use arbitrarily aligned IO submit.
Right now, the kernel is going to prohibit it. I'm not sure what happens if you take out that prohibition. I mean, it's you know, two lines of code you need to go off and delete. And I don't know what the outcome of that would be.
It would be great to have because right now we have to do a thread kernel switch for every IO twice, and that's bad. So, end of thread. Steve, your turn again. Mm-hmm. Let's discuss this further.
So anyway, this is a useful discussion, a good discussion, and I don't want to minimize it, but I think it is important to recognize that on the client side, what we're seeing here is amazing. We'd love to be able to take advantage of this on the server side. But, and in a perfect world, we'd be able to discard the unaligned blocks and just write the aligned ones, of course, but maybe. Okay, so, you know, at Storage Developer Conference, we had this slide with this, is he a former Samba developer? I don't know. But, so, things we said were in progress. Well, did we finish them all? Almost. So we did improve the POSIX compatibility, yes. The POSIX extensions, you know, we've had this discussion. We need to continue this discussion on that. We have the XAdder stuff in there. We have the improved reconnect and HA support, the encrypted share support. And, we have proposed patches for the SMB3 ACLs. And there are some security stuff in progress. You know, obviously the SMB3.1.1 finishing up, there's a little bit of finish up to do there. So, most of them done since SDC, but we come around SDC next year, all of those will be done and a lot more. Okay, so what are the things that you would notice? You know, there may be other opinions here. What would be the most obvious thing that you would notice that's improved in the last year? Well, encryption support, the copy offload. Most people are going to use, they like faster copy. This AIO much faster, the global name supports, the snapshot stuff, being able to mount an old snapshot. And I think, you know, you don't notice the reconnect stuff as much, but there are workloads where that the persistent handles being supported right makes a difference. Okay, statics. So Dave Howells merged this after, I don't know, it was like a four-year battle, five-year battle, something like that. But the beauty of this, from our perspective, is we can get creation time, and in a little bit more convenient way, we can get at whether it's compressed or encrypted. Now, is this code in the Linux kernel, the VFS layer? Yes. Is it in all file systems? No. So one of my tasks in the next couple of days, now that the merge window is open, is just to enable. Dave has a patch for this. It needs a little bit of cleanup. It returns the creation time in the statx call. In documentation in the kernel directory, it tells you how to use the new stat call, but obviously the man pages and others will be updated. We can also return whether it's encrypted. Now, it's a very small set of SMB-like metadata stuff that's in there. Remember, this is a moving target. Having a couple flags now gives us the ability for us to put in, as Samba developers, changing hats here, the set of things we care about most. What things the file system already tracks do you want coming back in the stat call? Obviously, the encryption flag, that's nice. Compressed flag is nice. And creation time is nice. But clearly, there are other things you want to return back from the stat call. But having it extensible means that you now have the ability, without having to wait 4 years, to get the kernel to put in additional flags. So what about bugs? Less than 50 bugs out on bugzilla.kernel.org. If you go look at these bugs, most of them are sort of miscellaneous stuff that doesn't scare you too much, older kernels. There's been some good progress with that. So what capabilities do we support from the high-level perspective? Well, we support all the ones that aren't bold. We support all of them, that are listed here, and the ones that are in bold we just added in the last 6 months. CAP encryption and persistent handles. Multi-channel, we got some work to do. Directory leasing are the unsupported ones right now. And multi-channel, I think we are really excited about some of that RDMA stuff that Tom was talking about. But I think it's also important to realize that some of the changes we've done for the groundwork here make it easier on the client side to finish up that. We query the info on what adapters are supported already. The layering is much better for this now. And directory leasing is an example where, even if Samba can't support it, directory leasing is not going to be that bad. That's something that we should be able to finish up on by SDC. Okay, so back to the AIO question that Volker and others were talking about. So let's say you're doing 4K sequential reads writes. You've got a VM. This is kind of our worst case example. You're running in a virtual machine, 4 cores, 32 gig RAM. The reason that was chosen was Pavel wanted something that was big enough to store the reads, caching them, right? So you have an I/O depth of 1. This is sort of like your default case, your non-AIO case, this is your previous case before the patches. I/O depth 1 simulates that. You're getting 98 meg per second. It's fairly reasonable. Notice the 4.5 times improvement you get by increasing the queue depth. So his patches enable us to support these larger queue depths. Before the patches, you would have been limited to about 98 meg per second, just like you do with the queue depth of 1 today. Notice the improvement in write speed. It's also quite large. Now, 40% faster. That's good. But what if you had faster back-end storage? What if you had SSDs or some NVMEs? What if you, and how would that compare with NFS? This is what gets really exciting. So these are just tests he ran. I think got the info yesterday. So this is very recent. With AIO, you're going from just much, much faster performance. This is really good. Now, the other interesting thing is the queue depth, increasing it to 64 doesn't really help anything. But going up to about 32 did. So this is really neat. Now, 4 times faster writes. You've got SSDs in the background. Sorry, in the back end, excuse me. So you're running with reasonably fast storage. 4x times improvement in write. That's amazing. Now, what about NFS? Looks good, doesn't it? We're a lot faster. Even before, we were faster. But with these changes, that's 7 times faster. 6 times faster, something like that, right? 5 times faster. Yeah. 85 to 450, right? pretty good. 85 megabits per second versus 450. But of course, if you include with the I/O depth bigger, right? So it's more than double. So yeah, with the I/O depth 32, we're more than double the performance. Yeah, very cool. So anyway, these patches are merged into 4NX. So if you're running the Linux Next tree, you'll see them. Any review would be appreciated, but they're expected to go into the 4.12 kernel. These numbers are fantastic. The takeaway from this is that applications that use async I/O will see, you know, potentially 4 times better performance with larger QDEPs. Copy offload, this is an old slide, but as you know, copy offload matters. Now that it's re-enabled in cp-reflang to be able to use copy chunk, you'll be able to see this. Obviously, it's even better if you're using REFS style, and we'd really want Samba to support the block copy approach and advertise that it supports block ref counting, because obviously we prefer using that. If the file system advertises block ref counting like REFS does, you know, it's very good. And as you know, block ref counting really is efficient. I mean, here's an example of a Wireshark trace of it. I think we've showed this to you guys before. I put it up again because it really is pretty amazing. Like, it's a pretty simple thing, and if we have that capability, if Samba exposes that capability, it saves us having to fall back to copy chunk. And, you know, here's the performance numbers. You've seen these in the past, but they're both amazing. And, you know, don't underestimate how cool it is to have server-side copy working without having to do anything magic. Fallocate, I think a lot of people care about sparse files in fallocate, and we've talked about before, this is a repeat. Collapse range and insert range are the only two that we don't support, but we know how to support. Punch hole, zero range, keep size, you know, making files sparse, not sparse, all that fallocate stuff works. Okay, so what are the main security features that we have to use for finishing up the secure negotiate and the ACL query? In SMB3, we can't query the ACL through an XAdder, but we can in SIFS. And we have patches for this, we just haven't merged them. Okay, so what are the focus areas for performance? Now, we do a lot of really cool performance features, but what are the things that would really help us the most? Well, direct releases. Right now, we cache metadata for a second. NFS caches for a couple seconds. Being able to cache it much longer because we have a direct release would be a good thing. Automatically upgrading releases from time to time based on certain characteristics would be helpful. And obviously, multi-channel and RDMA, especially in the virtualized environment, this, you know, and lightened transport and stuff would help enormously. And I think, step back 10,000 feet, some of you guys have had Macs or have Macs. I don't see many right now, but there are probably a couple Macs around. One of the things you'll notice with the Mac is they do a lot of compounding, crazy amount of compounding, right? You've probably seen this in your Wireshark traces. What that means is fewer round trips. One of the things you're seeing in SIFS is a lot of open query close kind of things with too many round trips. One of the nice things about Pavel's patches is it makes it easier for us to do. The code is better structured now, so we can reduce the number of round trips. But this compounding buys you more than you might think, cutting the amount of network traffic on a redir, for example. But the other ones, the non-bold ones, we all implement. Async vectored I/O, we do it. Large file I/O, we do. We do better. You know, we do a fantastic job with large I/O. Leases, sure, we support that. Copy offload and various Linux protocol optimizations. So the ones that are highlighted here are the ones that are the focus areas. The other ones we all do. And I'm very excited about this because I think that what you've already seen is there are workloads where SMB3 Linux kernel is the best way to get at the data. Now, POSIX compatibility. At the Storage Developer Conference, hopefully again we'll have some more discussions about this. I'm glad Tom and Jeremy brought up these POSIX extensions. I think from the short-term perspective, we want to continue prototyping this, and we have a fair amount of agreement on the requirements and what those contexts would look like for us sending a negotiate, getting back a context that says the POSIX capabilities, and also on open, what does a POSIX create context look like? So I think we're pretty close on that, and we want to continue these discussions here at Microsoft in June. And at the Storage Developer Conference, we may have an ability to do some final testing of these. But, you know, we're we're long past the point where these should be implemented, especially since I think, you know, at the Storage Developer Conference, we had pretty good agreement on the contents of what those two contexts look like. One that happens at negotiate time, and one that happens on every open. And they're optional, of course, but very helpful. So what's important right now? I don't want to forget about testing. All of you guys are used to running a SMB torture. Wonderful thing. In the file system world, we have XFS test. Seems strange it has the word XFS in it, but it runs a very large set of file system tests, some of which are, you know, file system specific that are skipped in our case. But if you run with a scratch device, a really large number of these run against SMB3 or SIFS. There are some failures. You know, network file systems are hard. Getting M time in NFS or SMB to match what you think M time is going to be on a local file system is never going to be perfect. But other than a few corner cases like that, where we're blocked right now in the non-POSIX case, in things that you don't think of as POSIX related, things like XAdder support. These are very easy for us to add in. A couple of tests require that you be able to write an XAdder. And then there's some POSIX things, mode bits. You know, this POSIX create context is going to get us through that last bit. So are we going to fail some things that work to a local file system? Yes, of course. There's a few examples, but not very many. And they're ones that are easy to talk about. But XFS test has a very large set that run today. There's a wiki page on samba.org that talks about running XFS test against SIFS or SMB3 mounts. It's a very good list for automating. And there is some automation of this going on because it caught regressions. In this last kernel, for example. And for those of you who care about running in Samba, this is also an indirect way to test against Samba. And we have found Samba bugs as a result of this. I think we've mentioned a few at last year. I think we found 2 Samba bugs here. Okay. I think this, stepping back 10,000 feet, we want to disable SIFS. This is something Tom brought up in his talk. SMB3 in Linux in the kernel looks really good as soon as we can disable SIFS. What's stopping us from disabling SIFS? Getting those two create context, well, the create and the negotiate context hammered out, implemented in Samba and one other server. We have path name mapping. We have symlink support emulation. We have the ability to get mode bits out of an ACL if we need to. What we don't have is that ability to specify when you open a file, case-related stuff and the POSIX behaviors on lock and unlink. These matter because if I open a file with all caps, open all cap Jeremy versus lowercase Jeremy, and I'm trying to delete it, I may get the wrong behavior depending on whether the server supported POSIX or not. So those two contexts, what they're giving us is the ability to handle byte range locks, unlink, and the case mapping that we care about. Now, selfishly, we do coding, right? You compile the kernel. You may have compiled the kernel today, right? So if you compiled the kernel today, sometimes it's nice to compile it over network. Well, what would have stopped you from compiling over network? Well, the fact we don't have case sensitivity. Because even building the kernel requires that thing. So, future is super bright. Let's disable SIFS, and maybe by STC, be great. We have pretty good emulation now. These two things we've talked about are the big obstacles, though. I'm satisfied with the SMB3 stability. Found some really interesting Mac bugs recently, but you know we can work around these kinds of things. But we have to have those two POSIX standards. So wholeheartedly agree that for this is incredibly promising. The stuff about the enlightened drivers, the stuff about better, the zero copy like I/O, very exciting. SMB3 is a very mature protocol and works extremely well with Linux, and I'm very excited about that. Now, we need lots of bug fixes. Aurelian's going to talk about his work, but would love additional code. We got another 2 weeks in the merge window, but once again, another 8 or 10 weeks, we'll have another one coming up. And that gives us lots of opportunity to put some of this cool stuff in. Okay, any last minute questions? So, we should have time for a few if anybody has questions. Tom's looking like you ought to have some questions. Yep.
You know, one of the things about multi-channel is that the guts of the client pretty much depend on having a single socket. And, mm-hmm. you know, we've made the observation many times in the past that to do multi-channel, we're really going to have to rip right. those guts apart.
Yep.
How do we go about that?
It's a very good question. So the current model that the SIFS code has implemented has a single thread for every socket we manage. So if we're connected to Samba different IP addresses, Windows, Azure, whatever else, we'll have a socket for each of those IP addresses we're connected to. And we're using that one thread to read. So we have one thread that's reading off that. But there are certain tasks that are done in that thread that relate, let's say, to the overall server structure, the structure of things that we, like the negotiate capabilities that are managed by, you know, that are known by certain locking that only happens in that thread because we have this nice model. As we move to multi-channel, you'd have reads coming in off one socket for one interface, reads coming off for another. So it changes a little bit how the locking would work. Now, the good news is it's one routine. So.
Yeah. Well, so we discovered in Windows, we had a layer called ServNet that used mm-hmm. to do that. It mm-hmm. used to serialize. And it was very convenient, right? Your up calls mm-hmm. from the network were basically mm-hmm. single-threaded. So yep. it was convenient for the upper layer. It could code in various ways. But it became a real performance bottleneck as CPUs became mm-hmm. higher scale. Mm-hmm. You know, the server especially wasn't scaling appropriately. We used ServNet on both our client and server input path.
This is only on the way back, though. It's not on the way out, right?
Yeah, it's generally on receive.
Yeah, right. Because this only affects receive.
Right. And so the second effect that we discovered is that stream sockets mm-hmm. Sort of take a single stream of bytes coming in, right? It might be mm-hmm. broken up into messages. You can interleave the messages, but you still have a reservation of a socket to drop a length byte, drop a stream of bytes, and, you know, finish that record. Mm-hmm. That's not the case on datagrams. And the biggest example of a datagram is the RDMA fabric. Mm-hmm. And so the single-threaded or you know, single-stream, best case, API, becomes really awkward on RDMA. And so that's kind of a secondary question. Mm-hmm. Can we get around that? Is it going to have upper-layer implications?
I don't think so. But here's the high-level view of this, and it's important to sort of think about it at this level. You have a multiplex ID in effect. In SMB2, it's a little bit different, but you basically have a multiplex ID. You've submitted
a window of requests.
Yeah. You've submitted a set of requests out there. Now, each of those responses correlates one-to-one with a request. So basically, from the point of view of our logic for 98%, literally, of the Linux kernel client, as long as the notification, the response is here, wake up. As long as that wake up mechanism is preserved, you've got a queue of requests that are pending. You've got all these credits and you've sent thousands of writes out there. Each one of those has associated with it something like a little multiplex ID structure that somebody's waiting on.
Yeah.
As long as that model is preserved, the amount of code is less than 1,000 lines of code that we have to muck with, that deals with. So it's all transparent how you wake up and complete the SOC and deal with all the pulling the stuff off, as long as at the end of it all, when it's done, you wake up the same guy that was woken up before. Yeah. So the code is encapsulated. It's extremely hard, as you say, because the underlying details of RDMA and how we read in parallel optimally, but it's about as isolated as you're going to get. Because the model that I've issued a read request to Samba, I'm waiting on Samba to respond to that and 999 other requests. All we care about is when this magic of RDMA is done, wake me up. And so it's isolated.
Yeah, RDMA follows that quite nicely for you. Yeah. There are ordering requirements, and the what's called a completion queue event rises up either from a receive or a send operation.
And what we're going to do at that point is wake up the actual user's read thread, or wake up the query info, or stat, or whatever
it is. There may be a multi-step operation as well, right? If there's a memory registration followed by a send, you can get more than one awakening. Okay, I take your point that the upper layer demultiplexing, right, of the message ID within the message window gives you some convenience there. Yeah. So,
I mean, I don't want to minimize the amount of changes it takes, but I also want to just encourage people, like, you know, some of the Microsoft guys have been looking at this code. It's not going to be that bad because it doesn't touch everything. Yeah. What it does affect is locking, and as you know, at the last test event we did, all of the locking was redone in effect to make this easier. Okay. Well, thank you all.